Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me today. Coming up over the next half hour, paving the way to ever better relations between Catholics and Jews, a conference dedicated to tracking the truth about World War II Pope Pius XII sets the record straight in Rome. What do science and faith have in common? Well, next spring, they'll share more common ground here in Rome as the Vatican announces an upcoming conference to study evolution theory, biological science, and faith. And keeping the tenets of Catholic social teaching on the political agenda ahead of U.S. presidential elections. A conference is currently underway here in Rome, gathering together Jews and Catholics committed to laying out the truth about Pope Pius XII, the wartime pontiff who some have criticized for failing to protect the Jews and of failing to condemn Hitler's diabolical plan to rid Europe of the Jewish race. The conference, organized by the Pave the Way Foundation, is just one step towards removing obstacles to reconciliation between Catholics and Jews. The Jewish Christian Foundation works to bring religions together through acts of goodwill and by helping to remove barriers to peace. A panel of Vatican and Church scholars and lay experts over the next 2 days will be presenting results of years of research into Pope Pius XII's activities during World War II. Their combined studies of historic documents, newspaper accounts of the period, and eyewitness testimonials from Jews and Catholics show the wartime Pope worked firmly in defense of Europe's Jews, taking great risks to defend Rome's Jewish community from deportation and to provide refuge and food to those the Church and its faithful were able to hide. Gary Krupp, himself a Jew and president of the Pave the Way Foundation, says that far from revealing a negative picture of Pius XII, his own extensive research into the wartime pope led him to conclude the Jewish community of the period was overtly grateful to the pope for his support. Krupp argues that the Jewish world opinion maintained their favorable opinion of Pope Pius XII until the 1960s, when a German play entitled The Deputy hit the stages of Europe and America, portraying Pius XII as an anti-Semite complicit with the Nazis. A number of members of the Jewish communities in the U.S. and Europe are here in Rome for the seminar. Not all are convinced their perception of Pope Pius XII will be changed by the conference, but they say they want to know more. They want to know the facts before they make any judgment.
I'm over here to see some facts and to review maybe my opinion about the late Pope.
May I ask what your opinion, possibly past opinion, is regarding the Pope?
Well, according to my information, he was a helper for the Nazis. If there is any other evidence, I'd like to review it.
Chief Rabbi Aloni is from Croatia.
I would wish that there was a greater dialogue, and whatever helps to bring both religions together, I think would save us from a war. Different opinions are there to be made, and if you sit around a round table and you decide that everybody has his own opinion, you found some bridge to reach, that would be a very good and positive sign.
George Blumenthal is a U.S. philanthropist whose foundation has helped fund projects including the digitalization of the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Vatican Codex for research purposes.
Opinions can change when people are aware of information. So at the conference here, you actually have Ellen Frankel, who is the publisher of the Jewish publication society. But they're the most well-known publishers of Jewish knowledge and books in the United States. And if she's here to learn, and she's a scholar, very well-regarded scholar, and actually has been involved and as an advisor to a project in the United States called Biblical Literacy, or Literacy Through the Study of the Bible. And I believe that you can influence people by making them aware of facts. I would say that neither people in Israel or people in the Vatican actually may have ever considered doing what Gary has done. And I would advise the Vatican, since this is being taped for Vatican, that they should really take a positive effort to gather this data together, as Gary has done, and present it through the Vatican website to the world.
One of the Catholic speakers at the conference, Ron Richlock, a law professor at the University of Mississippi, has spent years researching the pontificate of Pius XII. In his book, Hitler, the War, and the Pope, he tackles much of the criticism head-on, introducing hard evidence to contradict generic misconceptions about Pius XII. I asked him if he thinks the Pave the Way conference will be able to answer some of the questions and the doubts of Jews, like we heard before, and others.
I believe it absolutely is. We have brought in really some of the best informed people on the planet about Pope Pius XII. We're laying out evidence. We're reviewing the negative books, the accusations against Pope Pius XII. We're laying out the positive evidence we've put together. Really an amazing little booklet. Well, I shouldn't say little, it's over 100 pages, but a booklet of original documents, source documents, copies of newspaper articles from the time. And I do think by the end of the first day, we'd already changed a lot of minds, and I think by the end of the third day, it'll be very hard for people not to see the great work that Pope Pius XII did during the war.
Now, many Israeli and Jewish scholars apparently turned down invitations to come to this conference. To what extent do you think the Jewish community is interested in scholarly debate on Pius XII?
Well, you know, I think that they are interested. I think that they do want to reach the truth. But I also think that folks are going to be suspicious sometimes. Are we going to come here, get inundated? Is it going to be a polemical attempt just to not truly engage in academic debate? So the conference, what the conference is doing is we are presenting, I think, very high-level papers and presentations. They will be transcribed. They will be made available to the public. And I think once sort of the level of discourse is made clear, I think that folks will be much more willing to talk to Pave the Way and the people on this program.
Before changing their pronouncement on Pius XII, Jewish authorities have said that they first want to see the Vatican archives on the war years. Yet some of that material has already been made available, and apparently no one has shown any interest in coming to see it. So what's happening?
Well, I do believe that's the fallback argument for the critics of Pope Pius XII. And you have to realize a lot of the critics of Pope Pius XII are not Jewish critics. There's a lot of infighting among Catholics about this.
I was going to say there is an American rabbi who has come out and said that this is actually a debate going on between liberal and conservative Catholics.
Rabbi David Dallin made that point. Maybe it took an outsider to at least get it through to me before I really realized that so many of the critics are, in fact, folks who I think wanted to move the Catholic Church in a particular direction, and I think they're misusing the history of the Holocaust. I think that's a very evil thing and very dangerous thing to do, but I think that there are some people who have done that. One of the most notorious critics, the one who your listeners are most likely to be aware of, is John Cornwell, the author of Hitler's Pope. You know, he's essentially retracted his central thesis from that book now. He said, you know, in light of the evidence and argument that came out following publication of that book, I can't stand by its central thesis anymore. Yet the book is out there. It's the one that's being read. It had the notorious title that captured everyone's imagination. And so I spoke at the conference critiquing his book. Someone afterwards said, but, you know, he's retracted his thesis, and yes, he has, and I pointed that out during my talk, by the way. But I still have to sort of try to get through to the public, and the mere fact that he's said he's called back his argument doesn't mean it's not out there. So you still have to battle with that. So there's all kinds of issues floating around.
Sure. But again, there's also some of the war years in the archives have been released, have been made available to the public, but few people have expressed any interest in seeing it. And there are also archives of allied government offices, churches all over the Europe and America, all over the world, in fact. Many institutions whose archives probably have not been adequately or sufficiently researched.
Absolutely. And thanks for kind of bringing me back to the topic there.
You're very enthusiastic about your own research into this.
But the truth of the matter is there are 12 books, 11 volumes, one volumes and two books, of documents that the Vatican released years ago. Hardly any modern scholar references them in any significant way. There are more recent archives that have been opened. There are archives in other nations. If there's correspondence involved, the correspondence will show up in the archives of other nations. For instance, we know that the resistance in Germany used Pope Pius XII to contact the Allied leaders in London during the war, and in fact, to negotiate a potential coup to overthrow Hitler. Absolutely certain that Pope Pius XII cooperated in this. No written evidence inside the Vatican. The written evidence turned up in London because the Vatican couldn't keep papers very often. So the archival argument, I think, really lacks a great deal of merit. Moreover, at the conference, Father Peter Gumpel, the relator of Pope Pius XII's sainthood cause, spoke about the archives and said he has full access to anywhere he wants to go. He has spoken to the archivists. He said everything, nothing bad is in there. What's going to come out in the future will only confirm the case that we already know about the good works of Pope Pius XII to support the Jews and oppose the Nazis.
Yet he did say something at the very end, which was, you know, rather sad. He said, "I will make a bet with you right now that when the archives are finally opened, there will be many of those who will say, oh, well, the Vatican doctored some of those documents or they got rid of some of them."
That's right. And that's really why the archival argument, I think, is not a valid argument. We can say you got to open the archives, and I believe the Vatican is working very hard trying to make things, catalog things so that they can be made available. However, there's always going to be that ability for people to manufacture arguments and say that there's evidence that's been suppressed or is being suppressed. And that's why it won't answer the question. Even when the archives are fully opened, there are people who are going to come up with arguments. There are people who demand written evidence and they discount all oral testimony. There are people – every time you answer one objection, somebody raises a new one. And that was – one of the points I tried to make is that, you know, you got to sort of adopt reasonable standards and procedures and go with them. And I believe that the Congregation for the Causes of Saints is doing that. The critics contradict one another. Either he's a control freak who has to do everything or he delegates everything to his housekeeper. They're inconsistent charges, and they really don't make sense. You got to look at the overall evidence. When you do that, you see that Pope Pius XII really was a great champion for the Jews, for all victims.
Ron Richlack is a professor of law at the University of Mississippi and author of the book Hitler, the War and the Pope, published by Our Sunday Visitor. Thank you. Well, also here in Rome on Tuesday, a press conference took place at the Holy See Press Office to present an upcoming international conference on the state of evolution theory and the rapport between biological science and faith. The conference is organized by Rome's Pontifical Gregorian University and Notre Dame University in the United States, under the patronage of the Pontifical Council for Culture. Chris Saltieri attended the conference. He tells us more.
Science, Theology, and the Ontological Quest. This is the name of the international consortium of university students, fellows, and professors seeking to build a philosophical bridge between the natural sciences and sacred theology. Rome's Pontifical Gregorian University is the seat of one important branch of the Stoke Project, which focuses on the rapport between natural science and philosophy. And this coming March, hundreds of scientists, philosophers, and theologians will gather at the Gregorian to discuss the facts and theories of biological evolution in order to arrive at a critical evaluation of the question 150 years after the publication of Charles Darwin's Origin of Species.
I think this is a very important collaboration that we're developing.
Professor Philip Sloan of Notre Dame University's Riley Center for Science, Technology, and Values is a member of one of the four-day convention's scientific committees. He discussed the goals of the upcoming event during the press conference.
This important project will change the dialogue between the Catholic Church and contemporary science. It is very important for us to begin a major effort to develop a creative dialogue of theology and science, and especially with the sciences of life.
The convention is being sponsored by the Pontifical Council for Culture, the president of which is Archbishop Gianfranco Ravasi.
E questo è il compito principale che ora dobbiamo inaugurare quasi o continuare perché già alcuni passi erano stati fatti.
On the sidelines of the press conference, Archbishop Ravasi told me the time has come for a renewed engagement on the part of natural scientists with those formed in the humanistic disciplines in order to work toward a richer, fuller understanding of the human and the world in which we live.
Dell'uomo umanista.
The four-day international conference opens on March 3, 2009, and runs to March 7th. I'm Chris Altieri.
The way we think about the war in Iraq, the economy, relations with so-called rogue states, globalization and climate change is so often colored by what we hear on the news or read off the internet. And increasingly in our secularized society, it seems the moral imperative often gets lost. As the United States gets closer to voting for Democratic and Republican leaders in presidential elections in November, one Catholic organization in the U.S. is outlining the moral imperatives it feels the country's political leaders should be addressing for the good of the nation. Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good partners with over 20 national Catholic social justice organizations in the U.S. to advance Catholic social teaching in the media and on the public square. They've stepped up their campaign to promote awareness about Catholic social teaching in view of the upcoming elections. They're asking Catholic voters to encourage candidates and elected officials to address the moral scandal of poverty and help end the war in Iraq and put the common good of all people at the top of the nation's political agenda. Alexia Kelly, executive director of the Alliance, says, as people of faith, we must embrace common good values at the heart of Catholic social teaching and not follow narrow partisan agendas. She spoke with me on a recent visit here to Rome. Your work with Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good aims, like you've been saying, at providing information. More so than actually hands-on work in aid and development. Mm-hmm. Why is information so important?
Well, for the most part, I think Catholics get a bit of the message of Catholic social teaching, but they're bombarded by so many other messages in our media, which you said is kind of as excessive as the consumeristic culture. So we felt it was important through these alternative means and through some mainstream media vehicles to communicate this message of the common good and some of the principles of Catholic social teaching, and that many Americans, Catholics and non-Catholics, especially non-Catholics and opinion leaders in the American media, are very interested in this whole values dialogue. Kind of, we've had over the last several years a real debate or dialogue around faith and values, especially in our politics and our public life. So there's real interest in religion and public life. And we're made up of many Catholic, National Catholic Social Justice leaders and organizations. There are about 15 National Catholic Social Justice organizations that comprise our alliance. And they were very concerned because of the work they do, which is more direct social service or direct social justice advocacy work, that the principles of Catholic social teaching that motivate their work and provide the foundation for their work, their mission, was not being communicated in this values dialogue. So we do both information sharing, but we also do some intervention in terms of advocacy. We'll help coordinate letters to the editor or statements, for example. Sometimes on legislation, we could do a small percentage of work on direct advocacy on legislation on, for example, health care for children or some other public policy issue where our alliance of organizations want to make a collective, have a collective voice and make a statement together.
What makes Catholic social teaching different from other faith traditions? Mm. And do you work together with other faiths?
We do. We have and I said we had 15 National Catholic Social Justice Organizations. We have about 20 total because we also work with several interfaith groups, both Christian and across other faiths that participate in some in the work we do. I think what's different, and it's interesting in the United States, many other, especially in the evangelical Protestant world, some of the social justice, leaders for social justice, social renewal in those traditions look to Catholic social teaching for guidance and resources. So we'll have a minister, an evangelical, fairly prominent national minister, for example, Reverend Jim Wallace will say, oh, Catholic social teaching is wonderful, you know, and I use it all the time and it's a great resource. So there's not the tradition. I mean, Catholic social teaching for over a century, and you know the history, you know, since 1891, at least the formal modern tradition was launched. These kind of intensive reflections, commentaries, the papal letters by popes over the years since that time on these relevant social, economic, political issues is very unusual. And other traditions don't have that kind of tradition over time, mm-hmm. where they're looking at, and, you know, it's still today, Rerum Novarum is relevant in terms of workers' rights and the right to associate and organize. And that principle then was developed over a series of letters following, encyclicals following that tradition. So other traditions might speak more directly from Scripture, but Catholic social teaching both draws from Scripture and from natural law and from tradition. So it can be relevant to all the other faiths by using philosophical principles. And I think it has a depth of reflecting on these social and economic issues over time that other traditions don't have.
And you say you do have an interfaith program as well. How does that work?
Mm-hmm. Well, we work with other groups. For example, there's a group that is structured somewhat like ours and started at about the same time called Faith in Public Life. And they are interfaith, both Christian and non-Christian religious leaders throughout the country participate in their organization. And we just collaborate. So if we're working on an issue, for example, think of something around media work. They have a strong media department. We might share resources. We might share ideas. It's a Christian campaign and message, public education effort as well as Catholic. So they will invite and send out the information to invite their leaders to join the public education effort around that.
Now, we're in the run-up to the presidential elections in the U.S. What role do you see religion as taking on in the U.S., in U.S. politics, if at all?
Well, it's interesting. The bishops of the United States came out with their statement, political responsibility statement, called Faithful Citizenship, Shaping Consciences for Faithful Citizenship, I think was the full title. And they make some excellent points, I think, in particular about how Catholics in the United States should be relating to their political parties and to politics, that as Catholics, as people of faith, we're called to shape and help transform our political parties, not to be transformed by a partisan agenda, for example, or to be used by a party. We are to help call our particular party, whatever it might be, to, you know, these higher principles. And what role religion will play generally. I think, you know, within the last 10, 15 years, religion's and in the political debate certainly gets a lot of attention, and the media is very interested in the role of religion, both Catholic community, Catholic voters, and evangelical voters, and voters from other faith traditions. So the media is following it closely. I think this statement, faithful citizenship, at least for the Catholic Church and for Catholics, citizens, is a helpful foundation to really ground people in Catholic social teaching and essential principles in terms of how they reflect on candidates and issues. But certainly it will be, I think, just as it has been in the last several presidential elections, a powerful theme and something that everyone will be looking at and paying attention to.
And you, with the Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good, are you providing any guidance or advice what Catholics should be thinking about as they go to the polls in the next elections?
Well, we do, you know, some nonpartisan education work in general. We support and want to promote and get the word out about this faithful citizenship document. So we publicize the link to that website, and they'll have a bulletin insert that people can download off the USCCB site. We have something now that helps citizens in this run-up to the election. So in the debates now in their communities where Catholics all over the country can meet with candidates, we're encouraging them to lift up the principles of the common good and also the issues of poverty, global and domestic poverty, and war and peace, in particular the war in Iraq and a responsible end to the war in Iraq that the bishops have called for, and for peacemaking in general. So we have a tool for Catholics to lift up those issues with both elected officials and candidates.
I believe immigration is also one of the issues that you're looking into as well, no?
Yeah, we've done a lot on immigration. We hosted, this is an example of an awareness campaign. We did a radio tour of for three leaders, Father Rick Riscavige and two leaders within Sisters of Mercy of the Americas, who they work a lot on immigration. And so we hosted a radio tour where they, for one day, they did national radio in, you know, for 15 different outlets around the country, you know, in their office. But we called it a radio tour. So to get their voices out and the message of just and comprehensive immigration reform on the airwaves.
Alexia Kelly is Executive Director of Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good, which partners with over 20 national Catholic social justice organizations in the U.S. to advance Catholic social teaching in the media and in the public square. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.